Hey, how are you? This is Dave Schrein, and you are listening to the Church Marketing Podcast. So happy to have you here. Welcome. And if this is your first time listening, a very extra special welcome. Do any of you guys remember the movie She's the Man with Amanda Bynes and the guy from Arrested Development? Tobias was his name there, but he goes, welcome, 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 welcome. That's how I feel sometimes at the beginning of these episodes. But guys, really glad to have you here. This is yet another episode of what I hope will be for you church marketing goodness. Speaking of goodness, there is a brand new social network too, as a matter of fact. Two new social networks taking the world by storm, and that is Periscope and Meerkat. And for those of you who don't know what either of these social networks are, essentially, it is a new network that allows you to live stream content from your iPhone or iPod or iPad. Right now, it's only iOS devices. Android coming soon. To stream live video to the internet. So anywhere you're at, you can open up one of these apps, press stream or broadcast, and it takes whatever you see from your camera and projects that out to the Periscope or Meerkat world, and you can actually tie them into Twitter, so it'll project that content to Twitter as well, or at least it'll post a link so that people on Twitter can tune in. It's an incredibly powerful technology, yet there's a lot of mystery surrounding it. A lot of times when new technology comes out like this, we are hesitant, we are slow, we are very conservative or reserved to hop on board because there is so much that we can't control. There are so many things that we're just not sure about, and we wonder, should we enter into this space? Right now, there's a lot of nonsense happening on these networks, a lot of trolls, a lot of people just posting weird, stupid, and unnecessary things. But at the same time, the potential is great. You see, we are in the business of being more like Christ. And wherever people were at, Jesus would go. And if we're really going to follow Jesus, and if we're really going to follow in his footsteps, wherever people are, that's where we need to go. Because that is what led Christ. He went where the people were. And so when we look at new technology, whether it's Periscope and Meerkat or something that is yet to be invented or something that will come out next week, we have to look at it through the eyes of how can we reach the world using this technology for the gospel. And if we can make an intentional decision on yes, we will use this or no, we won't use this, fine. But if we just sit back and we let fear or we let the unknown dictate where we are going to show up and what we are going to use and do, I don't think that's a really good place to operate from. So in effort to give you a vision for how you might be able to use Periscope and Meerkat, but more importantly, this idea of live streaming, I want to invite you to come follow me and see how I'm using both of these networks. I'm going to post a link in the show notes, which, by the way, all of the show notes will be available at churchmarketingsucks.com/015. I'm going to post a link in the show notes to a quick video explaining to you how you can follow me on Periscope and Meerkat. Now, if you want to follow me, great. If you don't and you just want to experiment, great. I'm giving you the option because sometimes it helps to see how somebody else is using a technology before you jump in and use it yourself. My whole hope here is that you will catch a vision for how you can use live streaming in your culture, in your context. Okay, so real quick, before we jump into the conversation, I want to read one of our reviews from this last week. It comes from Pastor Caleb. He left it on iTunes. He says he's a first-time listener, and he says, as a pastor and communications missionary, I just love all that you do. Really looking to expand my understanding of marketing the church much more extensively and effectively. I am doing a seminar in October in New York on all that I've learned and all that I have gleaned from you guys. I will be sending everyone in attendance to your site to grow as I have. I do great at creative communications, but I can do better, and so can others. Pastor Caleb, really, really appreciate that. I will read more reviews on the next episode of the Church Marketing Podcast. But very quickly, I want to follow up on last week's or last episode when I put out the call for reviews. I said anybody who leaves us a review on iTunes will be entered into a contest to win a free copy of our Outspoken book. And so the winner, I put all the names in a hat. And the winner is Orange Johnson, another first-time listener. Orange Johnson, you're the winner of a free copy of our Outspoken book. So please reach out to me, dave@cfcclabs.org. Give me your information, and we will go ahead and get you your copy of Outspoken. We're going to run another drawing for another book for next episode. So go ahead, go to churchmarketingsucks.com/015, click on the leave a review banner, and leave us an open and honest review on iTunes, and we will enter your name into another drawing for a free copy of one of the Center for Church Communication books. Any comments that you leave on social media, we'll also be looking to read those online too. All right, guys, I want to go ahead and hop into this conversation because it's a long one, but it's a good one. I think one of the biggest, most underrated areas of church communication is in copywriting, particularly copywriting for your websites. We adopt this mentality, and many of our pastors and directors adopt a mentality of, I just want to get it off my plate and get it on the website. But you see, when you do that and you don't cast vision, you miss out on a huge, huge opportunity to bring new people into the fold of whatever it is you are doing at your church and however it is you're projecting that online. So I invited my buddy Mike Kim. Several months back, I appeared on his podcast, so I wanted him to appear on our podcast here. And quite honestly, it is a big treat because Mike is an incredible communicator who has great, great tips and tactics for us to apply to our online copywriting. So I'm going to jump right in, and I'll catch you on the flip side. Well, this is a conversation that I hope is going to be really, really helpful for you. As a matter of fact, I know that it'll be really helpful for you. And quite honestly, I wanted to invite Mike Kim to talk because I really want to take some time to ask him some questions so that I can be improving what I'm doing when it comes to copywriting for the churches that I work with. So I've got Mike Kim right here on the Skype line right now. Mike is a marketing consultant. He writes a lot, and you can learn more about him at his website, mikekim.com. And something that we're going to talk about that I'm really intrigued about and I think is going to be a huge resource for people who are connected to raising money as missionaries. He's the creator of Marketing for Missionaries, the online fundraising course. So we'll talk about that towards the end because I really want to make sure that people know that that's a resource. But Mike, hey man, thank you so much for agreeing to come and spend some time with us. I know you're busy, but it's great to have you finally on the Church Marketing Podcast. So welcome.
Are you kidding me? This is awesome. I'm so excited to be here.
Fantastic, man. Well, yeah, like I said, like I'm a little bit selfish here in wanting to bring you on because I really admire not only just the way you conduct yourself online and just by the way to people who are listening. That's how Mike and I met. We actually met through a online kind of platform building website that's done by Michael Hyatt called Platform University. But we've kind of taken our relationship out of that forum and into the Twitter, Google Hangouts forum. So that's how we know each other. But I really admire what you do. You've got a great podcast all about branding. I listen to it regularly. And so this idea of, you know, what does copywriting look like when it comes to implementing it for the local church? It's just right up your alley, and I know that it's going to be really helpful for listeners. I just want to start off by asking the question. I mean, I know the answer, but I want to give you a chance to answer it. Should churches be concerned with their copywriting? Like, is it something that should even register with them at all?
Yes. Flat out, yes. And I'll tell you what, anyone who's listening in, who's in a ministry or part of a church or looking to get your message out there better, copywriting is the cheapest yet most effective way to increase the effectiveness of your quote-unquote marketing. And I'm assuming that no one here who's listening has an issue with marketing and church because this is the Church Marketing Podcast.
Yeah.
But it doesn't require tons of work. It doesn't – I mean – I guess I backtrack. It does require work, but the return on something so simple as just paying attention to what words you use on your website can yield incredible returns in terms of perception, in terms of who you're attracting. So It's huge, and I wish more churches would pay attention to it. So we can get into that a little bit today for sure.
Absolutely. So just help me here real quick. Define, as we're talking about copywriting here, define for me what we're really going to be discussing, because I think most of our audience really understands what that is. But often we're dialoguing with pastors and ministry leaders, and we're not downplaying this at all, and we're not saying that they're not smart or anything. It's just not a world that they're connected with. So when we talk about copywriting, when we make that translation and begin to, you know, discuss with ministry leaders who are not involved in the marketing side of the church, how would we describe that? What is copywriting essentially?
Copywriting is essentially everything that is written that's on your website, your brochure, your marketing materials, your signs, any text that is written. Now, when it comes to a website, we know, Dave, that the websites are, by and large, the first gateway that somebody is going to walk through when they get to know a church, especially in this day and age, and it's only going to increase.
Yeah.
And the mistake that I see made a lot in churches, particularly when it comes to copywriting, and I write a lot of copy for businesses, and really the same principle applies. What ends up happening is churches cloak everything and write everything in this very churchy language that makes sense to us as Christians, but it does not connect to other Christians that may be coming from different ministry streams, because let's admit it, they're out there.
Yeah.
And it doesn't connect with the person who has never gone to church before. So the first thing that I would say is that when you look through your website, through a church website, it has to answer that age-old question, what's in it for me?
Yeah.
Because that is what that reader, that web browser, that viewer is internally asking. And if the copy is saying something generic like, we are a church that wants to expand the kingdom of God by making his name known, Jesus, the one thing we want is to know him and to make him known. That is so generic, and that's not wrong. There's nothing inaccurate about that.
Yeah.
It is, but it's not specific. It's not well thought out. It's much too cliche.
Yeah.
It doesn't reach anybody. That text doesn't do anything for anyone other than give people who already go to that church something that they can just kind of spout off.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, I love the way you framed it is, you know, you've got to answer the question, what's in it for me? And I think that a lot of times, you know, we will overlook that simple truth because we're so trained as church leaders. Oh, it's not about me. It's not about me. It's not about me. And we translate that to thinking that, you know, we don't have to write to other people because they know that it's not about them. It's about the church. But the truth is that this is something that Jesus was really, really gifted at, was talking to the person and helping them understand what's in it for them. And the passage that I always go to is the Beatitudes, because when you consider who was showing up, the crowds that were showing up on the mountainside, we know that it was not the Pharisees. It was not, you know, the religiously educated in the long-term, you know, Christians, so to speak, but it was the everyday townsperson who was coming to look and see what was happening. And Jesus spoke directly to them. He said, blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. And these people are sitting there like, he's talking to me. He's talking about me. I'm not a Pharisee. And so just this idea of what's in it for me, Jesus knew that fundamentally, and that's how he conducted all of his, you know, public speaking, you know, what we would consider copyright in a translation here for our purposes. But I love that what's in it for me. So yes, churches should be concerned with their copy. Copywriting is essentially everything that contains text. Let's make a translation here because I think, or a transition here, because I think one of the key things that I want to lean into is this idea of what does a sales page look like for a church? Because I think that's one of the primary things that churches use copy for, is to write a sales page. Now, we wouldn't consider it a sales page. We would consider it a sign up for camp, or we would say it's a sign up to volunteer. But in the marketing world, we talk a lot about sales pages. And I think that's one of the things that we could really benefit. So churches are essentially writing lots and lots of sign-up pages or sales pages. What are the elements that churches should be incorporating as they begin to write this copy for inviting people to participate? What elements do they need in that page, so to speak?
Sure. So before you even write the page, and this is what I walk clients through, whether they're in business or whether they're churches, I say to them, what is the one thing, what is the one action you want the user to take when they read this page? And that's where you build backwards from. So, for example, you're talking about sales pages for churches. Let's just say the homepage of the website, which is going to be the most viewed page, that, especially for a church, because they're not blogging and you know, podcasting. There are no direct links there. Still, most people are going to view the homepage of a church. So a recent client, church up in Connecticut near Hartford that I wrote their copy for, they said, well, we want three things on the website homepage. We want it to scroll down, and we want to feature our life groups, our kids ministry, and our weekly messages. Okay, pretty typical. And I had about six lines of text that I could write for these three different things.
Three very different things.
Three different things that are in three columns right next to each other. And so I wrote, legacy life groups, you were never meant to walk alone. Plug into one of our vibrant, life-giving small groups. Here's the what's in it for me. Connect with people, grow in your faith, and enjoy the care that happens in Christ-centered community. And they click the button. See, most churches will say, let's do life together. Sign up for one of our groups today. Now, there's no what's in it for me in that kind of copy.
Yeah.
But when I was writing this, I was like, well, I want to show what the payoff is. Connect with people, you'll grow in your faith, and then you'll enjoy care that happens. And okay, Mike, are people really going to make that association with the copy? Maybe not consciously, but subconsciously they will.
Yeah.
And when they read it over and over on this sales page or whatever you want people to sign up for, that what's in it for me and that intended action will help streamline that entire process and really get the results that you want. So with the kids ministry, and I don't want to belabor the point, we'll put links in the show notes and we can send that to people. But for the kids ministry, I'm thinking, okay, that's totally different than someone who's looking at life groups. Someone who's looking at the kids ministry is really concerned about their kids. So I wrote, we love kids. We serve toddlers all the way up to fifth grade. All right, details. Providing safe and clean facilities, engaging activities, and discipleship to raise up a generation to be fully devoted followers of Jesus. Now, that is a chock full of information in just about 25 words. Clean facilities, safe. I'm using these words on purpose. Engaging, discipleship, raising up a generation. Most church websites will say, come to our kids program where we teach believers about Jesus. And it's just, there's just nothing that describes it. I know that there are no pictures on this particular website page, so I've got to create and paint a picture verbally with, you know, clean facilities, safe activities, engaging activities, those kinds of things. So just these examples where we have small copy, you can do a lot with the right words, and got to paint that picture. And the one intended action is I want that parent to click that kids ministry button, and then they'll read more copy that's geared towards helping them make a decision on whether this might be a good place to bring their kids to church, right? So that's one element. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So if we were going full on, like I, you know, I run a lot of live events in my lifetime, whether it's church conferences or business events. So let's say that we have a registration page for a conference. I would make that page simple in terms of just the same things. Answer what's in it for me. I hear a lot of ministries and I see a lot of content on Facebook and all this. Sign up for our conference. And there's no what's in it for me. Like, why?
Because it's going to be awesome.
Because it's going to be awesome. And why? We don't tell them. We just put a picture of a really cool shot of the worship team. Oh my gosh. Like, we haven't seen that before. You know, and there's no story. There's no emotional connection other than please come to our event. Yeah. So let's say that you and I were setting up a sales page for a conference that we were putting on. First thing I would outline, okay, what's in it for the person who comes? Let's just list a few bullet points and we're going to weave this into the copy. Second thing, what do we want that person to do? Do we want them to share it on Facebook or do we want them to just click the register button? And if we don't want them to share it on Facebook and we really want them to click the register button, I don't even put the Facebook share button there as an option. It's too distracting.
Yep.
You limit what they can do. It feels strange, but less is more, especially when it comes to this thing. Should we put a video? I mean, that's okay. a video is okay, but here's what happens when somebody watches a video. They have taken an action.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes that video is actually shooting yourself in the foot because they're not, okay, oh, now it's a 5-minute video. I'm not going to sit here and watch 5 minutes of pan shots of the worship team and a bunch of people smiling and shaking hands with each other before the conference session starts and a few testimonies. I mean, that's so like typical, yeah, right?
It is.
It doesn't answer what's in it for me. So I'm putting probably just a picture, a montage of pictures. That's it. A big headline of what they're going to see at the event and benefits that they're going to receive when they attend that conference and sign up now. And that's it. Right. And here's the other thing, Dave, like if we're honest, if the church or ministry that's putting on that event stinks at video, I mean, that's even worse.
Yeah.
Right. So if you're going to do video, it has to rock.
Yeah.
And if it rocks, then okay, that's cool. If you want people to sign up through that way, cool. But I think personally a video is much better at the early end of a campaign for a live event because it sort of previews what's coming like a movie trailer.
Yeah.
But when you get to that transaction, I'm going to pay money to come to this conference. You want them to take that action and have copy that compels them.
That's awesome. So let me interject real quick. If you have some more to add, feel free to add it. But you're talking about the, you know, if you have them watch a video, then you're, that's an action that they just took. And now they're going to have to make another action if they are going to sign up, right? So now they have to make two actions instead of just one. Well, I am actually writing copy for an email that I'm going to send out on behalf of a client. And basically he said, I want to get people in the door right now. He's a mechanic. He says, we're doing 4 cars a day right now. We could really be doing 7. So I'd like to get more coming through. So I'm writing an email and I am just torn to pieces over something that's in it. So there's a comedian named Brian Regan, and he's got a great sketch talking about the noises that a car makes. And so, sure, you know, the whole premise of the email is your car making funky sounds? So I really felt like that video added value to the life of the end user. Like they're going to be able to laugh. It's a quality comedy bit. The video is pretty good. So in the email, that's already one call to action. And I was a little bit bent over, well, do I want people clicking out of my email? But I said, you know what, if it's really valuable and they really like the video, they'll probably come back. Hopefully they'll come back. So I made that decision.
Right.
Well, then also I have a call to action at the end of the email saying, hit reply right now. I really want to know what sounds you're hearing. If you could just describe, and if I can help you diagnose it, great. If not, let's get your car in. So it's just keeping contact with his clients and being very relational, very conversational. However, I really wanted to send them to Brian Regan's website because I wanted to be helpful. But I thought to myself, I kept going back and forth. I was like, you know what? I don't want them to do that. I don't want them to go to Brian Regan's website, get lost on his website, and forget the whole purpose of the email in the first place. So even though it would be useful and it would be helpful, it doesn't help me accomplish my end game, which is to get them to read my email and to reply. So just to kind of show a little bit there that it takes some discernment, and you actually have to cut out. I mean, wouldn't you agree that you have to cut out good stuff, like, you know, quality stuff sometimes in order to get them to take action on the most important thing? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Like if I was doing that campaign and had a longer lead time, I'd probably send them the video like a month before or 2 weeks before, just even a week before in a separate email. I would just break that up because I work backwards from I want one intended action and that's it. And a lot of churches will struggle with, well, how do we build out a marketing campaign? Here's how you do it. You just take that monster of a newsletter that you're sending out or emailing to your church every month. That nobody reads anyway because there are too many options. It's paralysis by analysis.
Yep.
There's too much the tyranny of choice is what we call it in marketing.
Yeah.
There's so many choices, you end up doing nothing. If you've ever gone into a burger joint where they had no pre-made burgers and you had to construct it yourself, you're like, this is more work. Mm-hmm. I just tell me what to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people want when you're marketing to them. Whether they say so or not, that's the most convenient thing. So take that newsletter and chunk it up and take one article, send that one article week 1. Take the second article, send it week 2. Third article, send it week 3. and fourth article that was about the conference, you send that week four. And so churches are actually taking all of their content and putting it in one basket, when really they should take all the stuff that's in that basket and share lots of little, smaller pieces of content.
That is so
true. And that's
where
most churches can do that right now. They don't have to hire a firm. They don't have to get a professional writer. They just break up what they want people to be reading one at a time. It buys a lot more time in the marketing campaign.
You know what it sounds like to me? It sounds like we're talking about doing with this newsletter or large portions of copy exactly what a pastor will do with a sermon series, right? There will be an overall concept that drives a sermon series, yet the pastor will break it out into 8 weeks or 10 weeks. So there's smaller portions that focus on a particular, you know, a particular application or call to action, and then it will all feed into the overall idea. I mean, I think that's a fair illustration.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, there's debate on, you know, is it good to just preach 1-point sermons? Are we watering things down? And that's not the issue here. The issue is that when it comes to marketing and communication with your church, with your congregation, they're too busy. They've got a million other things to read. And here's the thing. Because churches have been marketing, Dave, so poorly in the past, we have trained our congregations to assume, if I get an email from church, it's going to be some sort of announcement about something church-related.
Yeah.
There's not going to be anything valuable in it. It's going to be some sort of request or some sort of update for a service happening this weekend. I don't really need to read it. But if churches start taking a different approach towards their communication, saying, we're going to send valuable content on a consistent basis, we're going to do content marketing, and train our congregation not to miss our emails, you completely change that dynamic in that relationship. Case in point, I was helping this very church that I had mentioned before that I'd written some copy for start their church plant and raise funds for this launch of the church. And, you know, people thought I was crazy. Like, I was like, no, the first thing we need to do is build an email list. They thought I was nuts, right? But we did it. They did what I said, and I oversaw the whole campaign. And I'm telling you, the open rates for that church, 85% of people that were on their list were opening their emails.
That's
because
great.
There was continued value. I was asking the pastor, what are the three things that your church is founded on? We're going to make email out of each of one of these points. What are you planning to preach on? What's your view on this? What's your view on that? And people were interested in that. And the open rates were just through the roof. And here's the other thing. The email list kept growing. So don't have time to kind of really flesh it out today, but they gave me charge of their Facebook page. So here's what I did. I put snippets of what was going on in the email list on Facebook, mm-hmm. and I drove people to the email list directly from Facebook. And it wasn't hard to do. They used MailChimp. It's the free version of MailChimp.
Mm-hmm.
All I did was put the link directly to the sign-up form. And I was like, hey, find out what's going on. We have a guest speaker coming. Sign up for our email list. And people did it.
Yep.
People did it. So I'm a firm believer this works. I've seen it happen over and over and over again. Works for fundraising, works for church plants, and works for very, very established churches. The communication has to be valuable.
I love that. Yeah, value. That is the word right there. It has to be valuable, answering that what's in it for me question. So, you know, obviously we see the benefits in a communications department of, you know, spending more time on our copy, answering that question, what's in it for me, talking about transformation. But when it comes to working with the other ministries, a lot of times, you know, it's tough to cast vision to a children's ministry or to a student ministry on how they could be better utilizing the copy that they write. So, you know, if you were to just say, you know, if you're sitting down with a church communicator and they were just talking about how do I get the other ministries on board with understanding the value in not just, you know, putting information on the website that says we meet every Wednesday night from 7 to 8:30 p.m., pizza in the lobby,
yes.
you know, from 6:30 to 7, bring $2. It's going to be great. Friends are welcome. Like, how do I explain to them what stronger copy can do for their ministry? And maybe even you're having this conversation with the pastor, trying to advocate, you know, for more details from a pastor as he's, you know, sending, you know, sermon notes or whatever. How do you advocate for that? How do you paint the picture of what stronger copy? Well, first off, what does stronger copy do? And how would you word that in a way that somebody who doesn't think like us would be able to understand?
I would start with the pain point of the person who's coordinating the event. So here's what I know. What is the one problem that every pastor wishes he had? Too many people.
That's right.
So I would say, dear pastor, you want more people to show up at your church. Copy is the best way to do it. And it doesn't take that much more effort. Forget sending out tons of brochures and pounding this thing on the announcements every Sunday for the big lead up to the big event. Or youth pastor, over and over saying the same thing. Pizza, $2, so-and-so. What do you want? Well, I wish people would just show it without me having to tell them to. Great. The easiest thing to do is to survey what the students who have already come before have said, collect those testimonials, throw them up on this sales page or the flyer, whatever you want, and talk about the benefits. And you just walk through a framework, just like I've been saying. Mm-hmm. Let's start with what's in it for me. Okay, you want the students to show up to the pizza party. What's in it for them? Well, they get pizza. Okay, well, they can get pizza anywhere. Mm-hmm. Well, they can, you know, play some games. Well, they can play games anywhere. What else can they do? What else can they get out of this? We could talk about some real life issues, like what? And I would just keep digging down, digging down, digging down. And then that's what goes into the copy, because that's what's in it for me. Now, what's the second thing that we want them to do? We want them to register online to come, or let their parents know, or give this flyer to their parents. Mm-hmm. Okay, and the call to action is give this flyer to your parents. And you just walk them through this framework. Well, what's the pain point for these other departmental leaders? Gosh, we wish the new album we recorded would sell itself, or mm-hmm. we wish more people would show up. Well, the way to do that is just to make sure you're communicating on the easiest channel available, which is just through writing.
Yeah.
And that's how it solved that problem. So I get a lot of church marketing communication, still a lot of brochures, and they're all the same. They're all, here's what we do, Dave. Come to our conference this year because we have awesome speaker 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. And what they're implying is what's in it for you is you get to sit in the same room hearing this guy speak versus just watching them on YouTube. That's not a strong proposition.
Yeah.
If I were putting on a conference and marketing a live worship conference or church leadership conference, which I've done in the past, I would say, hey, you're going to meet other people who are in the trenches just like you.
Yeah.
You're going to get to hang out with them. We've built in networking time. You're going to be able to connect with one another. We're freely going to share each other's information, where churches are from. What's in it for you there? Community. Feeling like you're not alone. Feeling like you're not a loser, feeling like you're not isolated, and not feeling inferior to awesome speaker, mega church pastor, totally hip worship leader that's on the stage that we all wish we were.
Yeah.
Because we make that the primary attraction and then wonder why nobody keeps coming back to our events.
Yeah.
Right? But if you can say, hey, you're going to meet old friends and make new ones at this leadership event. And we're going to do small groups, and we're going to do networking where you can really connect and actually continue the relationship after you go home. Mm. There is a very, very strong appeal. If it's a regional type of event, I would say link arms. I used to worship pastor at a church in Connecticut. Link arms with other worship teams and worship leaders in the trenches in the Northeast. And I would use a negative to band people together as a positive. What I said was, in the marketing of these conferences, and we had big names come out. We had big time worship leaders from Jesus Culture, all these guys, but I did not make that the primary draw. Mm-hmm. What I said was, you know, we've all heard that New England is the preacher's graveyard, but we're going to change that perception. We're here to make a stand. Let's band together with one another in worship, in praise, in networking, community. And by the way, Jesus Culture, these guys are going to come and lead worship for us. It's going to be a great time where you can connect with them. And my appeal, because I knew where I was that people were not impressed by the flashy lights and the big stuff. Mm-hmm. They really were just a grittier people. You know, New Englanders were like that, you know?
Yeah.
And so I said, let's band together. And there was that, and that's what drove the conference, and they were a huge success.
I love that.
You know, it's just a way of angling the conversation.
Absolutely. You know, you talk about working your way backwards. A few episodes ago in the Communicating with Pastors episode, I brought one of the pastors that I work with at a church out in Ahwatukee, in Phoenix, Arizona. Brian and I, we talked about a campaign that we put together for small groups. And I actually did a screencast on how we constructed that campaign. I'll put it in the show notes for people who want to take a look and, you know, see how we actually worked from our end result, that final call to action, our end desired result, and worked our way backwards. But we are actually getting very intentional with what we're doing leading up to Easter. The church has never really been focused on why people should invite their friends to Easter, who they should invite to Easter. Usually it's just a generic, hey, invite people to Easter. Sure. And they leave it there. And, you know, one of my friends on Twitter, Erica Derrickson, she says, general requests give general results, and specific requests give specific results. And so, right, being just general, we never experienced any type of specific growth. Well, this year, they're saying, think about who the one person is in your life who would be most apt to respond to this invitation. Begin praying for them. Begin thinking about how you can, essentially get in the same room with them and make the invite and help them understand what they're going to experience when they go to Easter, why Easter is important. So these weeks leading up to the actual invite, we have been taking time each Sunday morning to cast vision and to talk about what's in it for them. What's in it for the people who are not only asking, you know, our congregation, we're asking, but also the people who are going to be asked. And what we've been doing, you know, you talk about taking content and translating it online, is we've been taking all of that content and turning it into web pages each week. And we link our church newsletter back to a web page that talks about what happened on Sunday in regards to this invitation initiative that we're doing. Now, we've never done anything like this at Foothills, as far as I know. So it'll be interesting to see the results. But that whole idea of working backwards and then progressively sharing information via a newsletter or via a social media or something. Absolutely. I love that idea because it doesn't overwhelm all at once and it takes people on a journey. And if there's one thing that we know about people, it's they love being taken on an adventure. They love being taken on a journey. So I completely resonate with what you're talking about there.
Yeah, and I would want to challenge all church leaders listening to this show is this, that when it comes to teaching the Bible, when it comes to expositing scripture, we're very careful with words. We dig deep into what the theological meaning is of a certain term. We really expound on that. Mm-hmm. And then here on the other flip side, when we're presenting the opportunity for people to come and hear the word we've so carefully and meticulously poured over, our words are sloppy and they're not convincing and they're not persuasive and they're not helpful. And there's a disconnect there, right? So if people listening, if you guys just flip this thing on its head and just say, okay, let's just start with what's in it for me and let's examine all the stuff that we're saying on our website, your copy would probably improve by 50%. Mm-hmm. I mean, that alone, because church communicators are not dummies. You very rarely see churches that have tons of misspellings and poorly worded grammar. They're just pretty typical standard fare copy. Mm-hmm. But if you just flip it a little bit, put in a few adjectives, it will really, really expound the effectiveness of the copy.
That's really helpful. And I wasn't necessarily going to ask this question because I think you've already spoke to it for the most part, but I'm just going to go ahead and do it anyways, because if you've got something else inside that brain you got there, I really want to get it out in regards to this. So most people who are listening right now are going to be fall into one of two categories. They're going to be part-time church communicators responsible for, the website, the email, the program, all this stuff, or they're going to be full-time, but they will be the only person in their full-time position in communications. They don't have anybody reporting to them. They don't have admin assistants. So time is of a premium. You just listed a few things, you know, flipping the conversation on its head, adding a few colorful adjectives. If you were to expand on that list just a little bit, what would be the things that you would say they should concern themselves first and foremost with, knowing that time is really, really limited and the ability to, you know, sweat over commas, so to speak, you know, isn't necessarily all there. What would you say should kind of be on that list as their main focus?
The main focus, if time is short, obviously I would just say hire somebody. Now, then the response would be money's short. Okay, that's cool. I get it. Here's what I would honestly recommend. This might sound strange. Go to a website that has strong copy that moves you, that compels you. Mm-hmm. Take that, tweak it. Love Nothing it. Wrong with that. In copywriting, that's what we call a swipe file. Now, all of the details have to match with your ministry, obviously. And when I write for a client, I've got to match that up. This is not plagiarism per se. This is inspiration derived from many sources, right? Yeah. So what do they say? When you steal from one, it's plagiarism. When you steal from many, it's called research, right? Yeah, I forget who said that, but it's a very well-known quote that I can't remember who said, but it's true. So get out there, find the best church websites that are out there. Okay, they typically are mega churches because they have marketing teams behind them because they understand the power of marketing and communications. Start taking different pieces and research what works, mm-hmm. what doesn't work, what you really like, what you don't like. If you're a mega church, look at some of the copy that they're using. If you're a more like, you know, if you're more traditional church, like a Lutheran church or something like that, you look at some other churches that have really good copy that's wired that way. And what you say will attract the people that already go to those kind of churches, right? Because we know that people who typically, I'm doing totally broad brushing here, I know, so I apologize, but people who are going to a Lutheran church are not really into top 25 CCLI songs played by four guitar players and a rock and drummer at the mega church down the street. They're usually not interested in that.
Yeah.
What they want to see on their website is more theological, very thought out, profound type of wording, right, on their church's website. Mm-hmm. And it happens for a reason. It works for a reason, Dave. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if churches could just do that, research. Quick tip, the way that I really improved my copywriting, I found great sales letters and hand wrote them. I copied them word for word 3 times.
Wow.
And what happens is you get inside the brain of the writer.
Yeah.
Now, that might sound crazy, Mike. That's a lot of time. The question was about how do we save time? You can research. If you want to save time later on, develop your own writing skills. That way it's simple as doing that. And you'll start to say, why did Mike use the word clean facilities here? Wow, I didn't notice that until I wrote it the 3rd time.
Ah.
But what does that evoke in the person that is reading this? What does this evoke to the mother who typically lives in Connecticut, suburban mother? What does she want for her kids? What is she watching on television? HGTV.
Yeah.
What is she reading online? WebMD and all these other mommy blogs to make sure their kid is not germ-free.
Yeah.
And when I say that on the website, there's a connect. Yeah. Even though we never think it, that's why I use that terminology. So
that's great.
Yeah, it's all in there.
So I've got one more copywriting question, and then I want to ask you about the marketing for missionaries piece that you have. The last question that I have, and go into as much or as little detail as you can or want to, but I think it's just a good thing to throw out there. Even if we need to save, the bulk of, how to apply it for another episode. But
sure. One
thing is, how do I write with the voice of my church? So if I've been tasked to write for the church, the program, the emails, the website, things like that, how do I get to the point where the words that I put out will reflect the voice and the brand of the church? Now, some people, they've been there for a long time, so, they understand the culture of the church and their natural tone and their natural feelings and affinities for their church, just so happen to line up with who the church really is. But I don't think that's necessarily the case. How do you kind of insert yourself into that place of, this is what the church needs to sound like, this is what I write like, here's how I bridge that?
Yeah, if I were starting a brand new project with a church that I was completely unfamiliar with, the first thing I would do is ask the pastor for anything that he has written. Because if we're really honest, it's going to come back to the pastor, especially a smaller church.
Yeah.
Okay. I would start with anything that he's written and see how his writing style is.
Mm.
Then I would go into his sermons and listen to a few audio sermons
mm-hmm.
and see how he talks. Does he write very scholarly but talk very informally? then I'm going to try to find somewhere in the middle, mm-hmm. right, with that. Now, Mike, doesn't that just completely contradict everything you said about what's in it for me? Yes, but what I would do is engage that pastor, that leader, that department leader, whatever it is, whoever they are, in some dialogue and say, okay, so here's the thing. This is how you talk. I have transcribed one or two paragraphs of how you talk when you preach. Mm-hmm. I am now comparing it to one or two blog posts that you've written for your church or an article of some sort. And we're going to now talk about how the people that come to your church typically talk. And we have to find some sort of middle ground here. So if you're writing very, very scholarly, but the people that are coming to your church don't really care for that, they're very carefree, they're very laid back, or they're a younger crowd, we have to kind of take some of what you're saying and express this in a way that really appeals to that person. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing. Let's say we have total theological writer, but when he preaches, he's very, very laid back, and the audience is laid back. Mm-hmm. Guess what I'm going to tell him? Two out of the three are laid back. The writing needs to be a little bit laid back on mm-hmm. your copy because it connects well with that audience. They're mostly spending time hearing you preach, not reading what's on the site, but this needs to align. Yeah. And that's really the simplest way that I would do it.
That's great. I think that's really, really helpful, and I think that's a really good place to start. So let's turn the corner here a little bit because we've been talking about the church in general, but I really want to hear a little bit more about this marketing for missionaries because I know that you've experienced some feedback and some testimonies of how it has really helped equip missionaries with what they need to write the pages necessary, to write the copy necessary to support their individual work for the church wherever it is that they're located. So here we've been talking about the local church, you know, here mostly in America. I'm sure we have international listeners. As a matter of fact, I know we have international listeners. But by and large, we're talking about, you know, large churches in terms of, you know, 100 people to whatever. But when we look at the missionary side of it, the big thing that they need to do is raise funds because they go across seas and their work is entirely supported by the home base back here in the States or back in their home country. So you put together marketing for missionaries. And can you just explain a little bit of why you chose to take on this project and, you know, what value it really is bringing to missionaries and kind of how it's played out? So, I mean, I guess, Mike, what I'm saying is just explain it to me so it makes sense because I – just in talking about it with you ahead of time is something that I'm really excited about, and I want people to hear it and understand how it's going to help missionaries.
Sure. So what happened, it all started, I wrote a blog post because I was thinking about two missionaries that are friends of mine that I wanted to give money to, right? I'm like, I'm ready to give you money. And I'm like looking them up. I have no idea how to give money to. They don't have a blog. They don't have a website. There's no way to give. And I'm like, gosh, this money is going to sit on the table. I'm sorry, but when I wake up, I'm not going to track down their address and get a check and go to the post office and send it. I don't even have a checkbook. And so I wrote this blog post, and it was called Five Smart Ways Missionaries Can Raise Financial Support. Well, long story short, it went viral. Like tens of thousands of people read it over a weekend.
Wow.
And hundreds of missionaries emailed me for help. So then I was like, I cannot facilitate all this. So I did a webinar. Hundreds of people showed up to that webinar.
Wow.
And I, you know, just outlined some things and answered some questions. Well, after that, months later, people were still reading this blog post. Actually, if you Google fundraising missionaries, I think that post is on the front page of Google. And strangely enough, it's the only post on the front page of Google that doesn't try to sell anything. It's just free information. And so eventually what I did was I built out this missions course after having worked with several missionaries and churches raising funds because it's all tied back to copywriting. The fundraising letter, the support letter, is really the sales letter for missionaries. Mm-hmm. And the emails that they send, the newsletters, it's really church, but on a smaller scale.
Yeah.
But it has much more transactional value because the missionary definitely needs to raise money. So I created this 6-module course that covers everything for the individual missionary who doesn't have a ton of money to basically set up a blog, set up an email opt-in list, grow their email list, grow their donor base, write helpful blog content, and write great, effective support letters. And I actually throw in 2 or 3 of the professional support letters that I've been hired to write for church plants to raise money, and I provide them as a template. So what's happened is these missionaries taken that letter because they have full permission to from me because they bought the course. They've plugged in their own information. utilizing all the things that we talked about today, Dave. Mm-hmm. And the results have been amazing. One store, he can't share his name publicly because he works in a closed nation. Mm-hmm. Let's just say he works in a country in the Middle East that starts with an I. Okay, there's several, but they're all closed. Okay. And he is like, Mike, I love the course. I can't start a blog or else we'll die. We can't do this publicly. How do I raise this money? He took my support letter template, sent the physical letter to 40 churches in his area. Okay, he's from the Midwest out here in the States. Mm-hmm. Sent it while he was on furlough to 40 churches in the area using my template. He got 5 invitations back from those 40 churches. Pretty good conversion rate to come speak at their churches.
Wow.
So now he was getting honorariums for preaching.
Yeah.
He was getting free will offerings because he was freely able to share what they were doing. And these churches were so compelled by his vision that they decided to support him on a monthly basis.
Wow.
Long story short, 5 of those people that responded, those churches, he ended up raising over $25,000 in just a few weeks based off the support letter template alone in the course.
That's fantastic.
And that's what powerful copy can do. This is not some, he didn't go through some long, he just basically literally took the letter that was a template, tweaked it, put in his own information. I knew it worked because it worked with other clients. And he had his entire like last quarter of last year paid for through this one trip. On top of that, these churches are supporting him on a monthly basis. And as word got out, he started getting invited to missions conferences to share his work.
Wow.
So it really works. I would just recommend you guys check it out. I'll send you the link for that initial blog post because it'll be helpful to anyone that reads it that needs to raise money. But if you guys want to take the course, why don't we do this? Let's set up a huge discount for listeners of the Church Marketing Podcast. That
sounds
cool?
Yeah, that sounds so great.
Let's do CMP, Church Marketing Podcast.
Right.
You go on there, it'll knock $100 off the course. That's more than a 50% discount. It's $197. We'll knock off $100 and you can get it for $97. 30-day money-back guarantee. I'm giving you license to steal from me. Download the template. You say, Mike, the rest of this is no good. I want my money back. I will do it. No questions asked because I just want people to – I want missionaries especially to have a much easier time raising money. Marketingformissionaries.com. Use the code CMP and it'll be all taken care of.
I love
it. No questions asked.
I love it. That's great. And you know what I did? I found the original blog post here and I'm just looking at the comments and you definitely struck a nerve with this letter. Now I haven't read the letter yet because of course I'm talking to you, but I was just, as you were speaking, I was just scrolling through and yeah, you look at some of the comments here, some of the phrases, that people are saying, you know, I'm in the same process of setting myself up in the way that you're speaking about. Someone else here says, I would love to learn how to fundraise better. I've been on the mission field for nearly 12 years. This is the first year that my support level is really low. Mike, I think you put into words much better than I could the philosophy that I have. I mean, it just really did strike a chord with this demographic of people. And I really appreciate that because I do think that there is room not only for the church to get better, as we've been talking about, but when we talk about these high cost initiatives of sending people overseas to do the work of the Lord, it requires money, right? Like money is a spiritual commodity. Like God chooses to use God doesn't need money, but he chooses to use money to further his kingdom in so many ways. And it's just a truth of how we operate. So I really appreciate it, Mike. I really do hope that if you're listening right now and you want to forward this podcast to missionaries who you are connected to, who you can contact with, feel free to do so. As a matter of fact, I encourage you and implore you to do so because this is one of the most practical ways that this is one of the most practical ways that we can offer help here at the Church Marketing Podcast to this demographic. Now, one question about it is this, is somebody who is going on a short-term overseas mission trip and using an initial support letter, is this something that would help them go through?
Absolutely. Okay. Because you can just take the support letter and here's what I say. Let's say you buy the course and it's $97. Oh, Mike, that's so much money. I don't really need that. Well, how much time are you going to spend writing that support letter?
Yeah.
6 hours, 10 hours? You just, you know, and you break that down over 10, it's $9 an hour. you're saving.
Yeah.
And it's going to get results. Yeah. I guarantee it'll get results. So that's absolutely, awesome. Guys, check it out. Marketingformissionaries.com. My pleasure to help.
Fantastic. Well, Mike, we've gone so long and it's just flown by. This is a topic that I'm really passionate about. I love email. I love the power of email and copywriting. It's just right up there with a necessity when you're talking about maximizing open rates and you're talking about, you know, people traveling back to your website and actually responding to the things that you're asking them to do. So thank you. If you were to send people to connect with you more, where is the best place for them to reach out to you, to connect with you, to tell them, you know, how helpful this has been?
Just MikeKim.com. I got a big contact button there and can find me all over social. So even that original blog post is on my regular blog. So MikeKim.com is the place to go.
Great. Mike, appreciate it. Appreciate you. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Well, there you have it. Hopefully you guys got plenty of good stuff that you can take and apply to your churches. Mike is incredibly talented and obviously that comes through. Be sure to check out his podcast, the Brand You Podcast, and take advantage of that offer there, especially if you are at a church that really places a high value on the missionary piece, on the overseas, on the global outreach, things like that. Guys, we are coming up to the end of this episode here. So before we leave, I want to draw your attention and remind you guys about the certification lab that we have coming up June 8 and 9 in St. Louis. Now, if you have never attended a certification lab yet, you have got to consider making this a conference that you attend this year. And the thing is it's way more impactful than many conferences because we intentionally keep the number of registrations low. And the reason why we do that is because the number of people has a direct impact on how much you're going to be able to take away from a conference. We want you to extract as much goodness as possible, and we have positioned the optimal amount of spots and made those available. So get online, get registered. If you want to save some money, I believe the early bird discount is still going on. So use the code podcast-early. You'll get an extra $50 off the early bird rate. That's the best deal that you are going to be able to get anywhere. So get signed up, cfcclabs.org/certification. I'm planning on being there this time, and I'd love to meet you guys. And I have attended in the past, and the instructors are just fantastic. I've been doing church communication for, you know, about 6 years now, and I learn something new every time I get to hang out with the instructors. So I'll actually put a link to our last Cert Lab instructor hangout and let you guys take a listen to that. But really want to encourage you guys to sign up, to consider it, to make it happen. I'm hoping that some of my Twitter buddies will be able to make it out there and we'll be able to do a meetup as well. All right, guys, that is it for this episode. I appreciate you being here and taking time yet again to spend with us. If you are not following me on Twitter, I would encourage you to find me at Dave Schrein. Let me know you listen. Let me know how I can build this podcast and what type of guests you'd like for me to bring on. You can catch up with me on my blog, daveschrein.com. But until next time, Schrein out.